Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Tiff from Givers.
And I'm Taylor.
So we got your Lafayette. We got your Katrina. We've got a duo first. 2008 was the first kind of thingamajig, and it was an unplanned jam, and then there was college 11 years ago. So let's go back to Katrina, because this is a thing. What happened resulted in all sorts of amazing learning, but it also, and this is really terrible to say, but all sorts of artistic things that happened, including the people I'm talking to in this band, right?
That is very true. I think that's also true about any experience that you have in life, is whether you choose to see what can come out of it.
Even if it's 15 feet of water.
Yeah, that was one of them for us, for sure. And we were really young. I was a freshman at UNO. Taylor was a sophomore in college. And we were living in the same house, except I was staying on his couch because I was, there's a lot of slumlords in New Orleans.
The hurricane definitely did bring us together in a crazy, destructive, creative way because we definitely were displaced. We had a college career path in front of us that we thought was our route for sure.
I was a drum major, but I would have failed if it wouldn't have been for Katrina, because Taylor was trying to teach me theory and I realized I was way in over my head going to New Orleans. And
you're a great drummer. You were doing great in your theory. You could have passed, but yeah.
Oh well.
Anyway, that's what I was studying. You were studying?
As a music major, jazz studies, that was our start. We were gonna be in the music major world, and the hurricane came and we definitely were displaced. Our school, the UNO, was flooded. And so they basically said the rest of the semester is off. And so we floated around. We went back to our hometown of Lafayette. And we basically just eventually started playing music together. And it started feeling good.
Zydeco, jazz, and Cajun. At least the current music is about the swing and the attitude and the soul behind it. But again, more like the soul of the sneakers, right? Where it hits the road, not... Because, again, we'll get back to that.
That's a great metaphor. You take a backbeat of a genre, like a Zydeco backbeat, like a double clutch. But that could be a pop song. That could be a rock song.
Pop songs are pop songs. A song's
right. And so
a song's not a genre.
Right, or a beat, right. And so that's something we like to experiment and play with. We extract the DNA of a genre, whether it's a Zydeco DNA, where we will pull a backbeat out and we'll experiment, like a song like Remember. It was like for a while we were demoing out as like this thrashing kind of punk rock ruckus kind of rock and roll song.
No, you can't. You can't be Givers and do punk.
And that's kind of, we play with that idea of what we are and what we aren't. And that was one of the experiments that we did was, we took, okay, let's take all the drums out of the song and then add this backbeat, this new backbeat. This is kind of a Zydeco-esque backbeat. And that's where we end up experimenting and taking different turns that we might not even expect.
So Aaron, who I met, I now know, I it's like, oh, he's the tour manager. But then I realized that he's played a little bit more of a role in the band, like getting you that nice gig. But, when you're talking Dirty Projectors, there's another example of a band that the second that anybody tries, I'll get their new record, which I just did get their new record, and I won't even try. I'll just kind of listen and say, I like that track. I won't try to put it in any sort of, musical corner. So opening for them was like kind of a perfect thing for this band, because it would be the most unexpected thing.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect. I mean, I thought it was perfect because I just loved the band so much, and I was so inspired by that exact quality that they have. It's very hard to pin down a genre within all of the albums that they put out, and I love that approach. I love that style.
So let's do the Glassnote story, because there's always a good Austin City. In this case, it was Austin City Limits. Is that true? So fill in the blanks there, because I was in that. I had never been in that theater until recently, and I actually saw friends of mine there recently. And I walked in that new theater, and I was like, oh, my God. But this was before then, obviously. This is 2011 in the old school theater.
It's funny. It was actually the festival. It was actually the outdoor Austin City Limits festival. Yeah, we hadn't played in that theater at all. So the way Daniel tells it is that he was late getting right off the plane and heard us in the distance. He had known about us. He was coming to see us. And apparently, you know, he's a marathon runner. So him and Nick Petravas end up running, sprinting to come see us. And he always talks about it. I was so out of breath.
No. He says, oh, I was running. I looked back. I left Nick. He was way because he's a smoker. He couldn't keep up.
Not anymore, though, right? So, yeah, he saw us there. And he came backstage afterwards, and I met him, and he was like, I'd very much like to hang out with y'all. And from there, it was kind of like one of those things, like, became friends talking with him, and it was just like, wow, this guy is something special.
We kill genres. When people go to you for the influences thing, that's like impossible to do, right?
It's not fun to put yourself in a box. It's not fun to say, like, oh, this is my father influence, my mother influence, this is my North Star, this is my Guiding Winds of the East. But, you know, there are definitely bands like Talking Heads that have given us certain musical genetics that we can't deny, you know? And I'll claim that any day.
That Mac guy, that doctor guy, he's also in your stuff this time around, and that's pretty neat stuff to have someone be in, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very neat. He's a huge part of our world. He's literally my first memory of live music as a child. I remember being on a blanket. I think I was even still in diapers. My mom just loved Dr. John, and she took us to some concert in Lafayette at Cajun Field. And I remember being as a kid, I remember the only thought that I retained from that day was just feeling like, man, my mom, this guy must be so good for my mom to be so excited and dancing to him, and I can't even see him. Like, he's, like, so far away, I can't even see him, but my mom is so happy to hear these songs that he's playing. And then I grew up, you know, loving and, you know, revering him as, like, the godfather of, you know, New Orleans sound.
So who made the call?
Who made the call? To get him on the track? Get Mac on the track.
Hello, Dr. John. We're givers, and we idolize you, and we're pretty good. You know, we got 45,000 people on Facebook. How many do you have these days?
I don't even know.
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
I didn't look it up either.
You should look that up. How many people Dr. John has on Twitter?
I don't even know.
I wonder what his Instagram. What his Instagram is like. I bet he does.
He does. Well, you know, Taylor had always heard, oh, this part needs spoken word. And I think he tried to do it a few times himself. And was like, you know,
I can't get the good old rap.
Well, and we, you know, being from around that area and loving him so much, like, he was like, man, we got to get Dr. John on this track. And actually, Corey Ritchie, our buddy, amazing engineer who co-produced the past two records with us, he was a house engineer at Dockside Studios, which we recorded the first record at, and then part of the second, the one that we just released, record at. And he ended up working on some stuff with Mac at Dockside, because Mac loves to record at Dockside. It's an amazing studio out in the swamps off the Vermilion River. Beautiful property that you get to just go and disappear into. No cell phone service, and you get to just make amazing magic happen in the woods. And so he knew him, and Matt kind of felt, I guess, really close to Corey, almost like he was a nephew of his or something. He's like, you know what, I'm gonna call Matt. Like, Matt will call him and leave him these gnarly, amazing voicemails, like, Corey, I'm calling to see what your ass up to. And so he shared these with us. We're like, man, you gotta call him for us, please. And he did. He called him, and he actually went. Dr. John, you know, has had some health issues, I'm sure you can imagine, and he eats wild game, like, pretty, like, exclusively.
He doesn't eat any processed meats, so he only eats wild game.
Especially squirrels. He loves squirrels, and squirrel brains is like a delicacy. It's his favorite. You know, if you're going to get him a squirrel, like, save the head, or he doesn't want it.
Anytime somebody brings up squirrels, his first question is, they still got the heads?
Yeah.
Because they like the brains.
And around there, there is quite a Squirrel Brains infatuation.
Band name number 4.
Squirrel Brains.
Squirrel Brains.
Now we have to go punk.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Squirrel Brains. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to connect this to another thing that's kind of fun in a second, but I'll just do the quote here. I'm going to do it in the full announcer voice. You didn't say it this way. We had a nomadic recording experience on the new album. But it is kind of interesting because it was about the vibe, right? It wasn't about, oh, we're trying to get a certain sound in each studio, because in the end it gets mixed and mastered. Is that true or am I wrong?
Well, I mean, it was definitely about a vibe. It was definitely about the album having this umbrella of, you know, like there's a conceptual umbrella that ties all these songs together. And at the same time, I feel like each song is its own little world. When they all connect in that regard, like each song is a different flavor, which they're unified by this
theme.
Yeah, they're unified by theme, but they're also unified by their diversity. They're unified by each one taking you a different place, and it's a different chapter. And so, you know, whenever it came to different studios, it never we never got tied into feeling like the album needed to sound like this filter upon the whole record. It went to different landscapes, and we felt like that was like the direction to go, is to, you know, it's like this new kingdom. Within the new kingdom, there's this walk through the mountains, and then it levels out, and then it's this walk through the hills, and then you get to this river, and it's each song is a different chapter and a different scenery.
Let's talk about the sound for a minute, because you talked about, you know, the vibe and the songs all kind of thematic, but more but you also, you know, album 3, right? What was the change? What's the flip of a switch for the change up? And how much of a change up is it really?
For New Kingdom being, you know, a second record band, we looked at all the things that we explored on the first record and the things that we got comfortable with for touring that music for 2 years. And drums, bass, guitar, you know, was our first record. You know, a lot of that world, and messing with the idea of grooves and melodic play. And then when it came to just opening up the window to new sounds, it just became, okay, we have all these synthesizers in front of us, and we're inspired to use them. And, you know, we use them in ways that were a little non-traditional. A lot of parts that you hear throughout the record are triggered. They're synthesizers. They're triggered by guitar, like a MIDI guitar pickup. Our boy Josh, you know, he discovered this cool thing where he gets this MIDI pickup on his Telecaster, and it's basically running to the synthesizer in front of him. And so he's playing these lines, and they come out as synth parts, but they're triggered by his guitar playing, his approach as a melodic guitar player. Cool. And so that was just one thing that was like, oh, that's working. Let's use this for this song. Okay, and then overall, you know, just using other instruments, I feel like it's just a chef who wants to expand the palate, wants to expand, you know, where you take the listener, what flavors you're throwing in. And it just made sense. This band was based upon the idea of exploration. Like, the band started, it was conceived in this idea that we've all been in all these funk bands, and we've been in rock bands, we've been in jazz ensembles and little trios, and we want to do something new and fresh and something that challenges us and pushes us to do something different. And so just the sound, like the synthesizers and 808s and like electronic drums, it's like a natural progression to just be pushing us into a new place.
Oh, let's talk about the visuals, as in the videos. You guys like to tell stories. You also like to creep me out a little bit. What's wrong with your eyes, woman?
Oh, I eat a lot of carrots.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, bunny rabbit. They were contacts. You know, we wanted to create like a different world. This record, as Taylor was saying, we created a different world in this record, and New Kingdom became that world, and that was part of the video. Whenever Taylor and I wrote the treatment, we wanted to embody that, almost the sci-fi element of this record. You know, there's this New Kingdom alien being crash landing to Earth. via Me and My White Eyes. But there's more. We're actually filming the sequel, when we get back from this tour, like the day after. So stay tuned.
Okay. I don't do this often. I'm going to do this now. Ask each other a question.
Tiffany Lamson of Givers. With this new album, New Kingdom, what was something in the process that you, what was a discovery? What was one of your discoveries that you discovered that was unexpected for you along the way of this whole recording process for you as an artist?
Wow.
I feel like that was
the
hardest, this is the hardest question I've ever been asked in an interview.
I'm sorry, I've just been outmoded here.
Yeah, you did.
What, okay, to rephrase the question, okay. There's two parts of you. There's Tiff, and then there's Tiff, the cool chick, and then there's Tiff, the artist, singer, songwriter, givers. What was something you discovered as Tiff as a person and Tiff as an artist?
You just rephrased the question even harder, I think. Every album you should, I feel like you peel back every scab you've ever had in your entire life to dig down and find what it is you're trying to, I don't even know how to put this, to kind of, like, let it bleed into the songs, because you want, at least for me, if it doesn't have that blunt, honest truthfulness to myself, at least maybe it comes out as ambiguous lyrics or something, but if it's not something that I know that's sincere, then I'll just like hate it. And so as a person, it's often for me a almost painful experience writing music at times, because sometimes, you know, eventually I'll dig into my past or have a super reflective surface, as in the people around me, as in you, Taylor Grisham, to see what parts of myself need to evolve to make the music that I need to make. So there's that. Okay. Taylor Grisham of Givers. Here I am in an interview asking you a question. How do I top that? Okay. What is it that you found was the most enlightening, like the which process of the recording of this record, New Kingdom, was the most enlightening moment during recording for you, where you felt like this is gonna be what I remember whenever I go back and think about the whole process? Which moment was your, I don't even want to say favorite, but was, even if it was a hard or struggling experience, what was the, I don't even want to say best, but what was it? What was the moment?
In this process, the maybe a eureka moment or a standout moment, this record we made is a layered cake, a dobosh, layer upon layer upon layer. And I feel like while we were baking, it's just the kitchen was hot and I'm sweaty, and you don't enjoy the sweetness of what you're making. You know, you're just like, we got to get this out and we got to do it now. But to answer your question, I feel like whenever we went back to Dockside after we had done some mixing and I got to listen to some mixes, I felt like it was just kind of like, this is the record we're making. And I'm sure a lot of people experience that.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread on the outside, and then songs by others in between.